This is Open Air on the Rhythm and News service of Jefferson Public Radio, also streaming online, ijpr.org. I'm Eric Thiel. Thanks for tuning in. We've got another live session for you here on a Friday afternoon. Joining me in the JPR studios, the band Tarmac Adam, Matt O'Donnell, Steve Pay, Josh Barber. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for visiting with us. Let's talk a little bit about the history of this band, because there is a slow period in the middle. The history of this band goes back to about the year 2000.
Yeah. Well, we started the project then. Steve and I got together and started writing some songs, and we're fortunate enough to meet up with Paul Hester of Crowded House, and then Nick Seymour through Paul, and another guitarist, Sean McVitie. So we made the first Tarmac Adam record, Handheld Torch, which was released in 2003, which was a great record to make. We made it between here and Ireland, Australia and Ireland. And then, yeah, we had a break. I mean, we worked that record for about 18 months, and it was enjoyable, but really enjoyable. We were at a stage of saying, what's next? Mm-hmm. And then, very sadly, Paul Hester died, threw everything out the door, I suppose, when something like that happens in life.
Yeah. So did the band form in Melbourne?
Yes, in Melbourne, Australia.
All of you were living there at the time. Do you still all live in the same spot?
Yeah, we do. Nick lives in Ireland, so that poses some challenges. But.
And did you all have separate music careers outside of the formulation of Tarmac Adam? Were you all doing different things?
Yeah. I was doing a solo thing for about 5 years before that, and traveling around and doing that. And Steve.
Yeah, Matt and I pretty much got together working on Tarmac Adam stuff. You know, we sort of met through an auspicious circumstance and then ended up, you know, sort of having some time free available. And that's when we did the first album, and we were able to get to know how to work in that situation. Yeah.
Yeah. The new album is called The History Effect. Let's start with some music, and we'll talk a little bit more about the name of the band and how that album came to be. What are you going to play first for us?
I'm going to play a song called Chalk on Slate. On a day I didn't really know, time and place, it was just for show. With my hand on the wheel, it's shaking, a pedal with a mind of its own. Sucker Saruman is waiting, with the job he says he's now vacating. Trapeze wasn't really my thing, but a caravan with time to sing in. Walking Sunday, talking Monday, fall in my way, chalk on slate. Travel with the wind today, thinking in an opposite way, with my mind going back to forwards. Amusing though it is, I can't say. Not a literal sign I'm trying to make. Stranger's voice supplying the break. With the ball on the end, it's swinging. A chain is looking me in the face. Walking Sunday, talking Monday.
That is Tarmac Adam live in the JPR studios, Chalk on Slate from their new album called The History Effect. It's kind of an interesting image, Chalk on Slate, sort of a temporary message. What's the story behind that song?
Yeah, well, that song sort of, it's a journey song, and it's sort of around, you know, you're traveling the path of life, which is what Tarmac Adam tends to do, and it's sort of that idea of, you know, keeping track of the decisions and the crossroads you come to. And I just like that image of that old way of keeping a record of things, which writing it down with chalk on slate. And the added bonus is, if you want to change the story, you can, because you can rub it out and write it down again.
You know, a lot of people are familiar with the term tarmac. Not a lot of people are familiar with the term Mac Adam or Tarmac Adam, which is where tarmac comes from. Asphalt, essentially. Was there a particular reason that you chose that as the name of the band and then split it, Tarmac Adam?
Yes, there was. And the first part of that was we quite liked the rhythm of those that to pronounce that Tarmac Adam. There's always a challenge coming with a band name because you don't want something too edgy, you don't want something too soft, and it's sort of got to have a nice melody and tracking to it, if you know what I mean. And then we came across that when we were in Ireland because this friend of Nick's fell off her bike and she'd grazed her knee, and she said to Nick, I fell over on the Tarmac Adam. And it was like, oh, yeah, that's sort of a nice term. And we sort of hung on to that. And by the time we came to coming up with the name for the band, because we'd already made the record just as a group of guys making a record. But that's a nice name. And we really like that idea of now we split it up. It's like Adam being first man. It's every man's journey. It's the contemporary journey that we all travel down modern day tarmac of life.
But we do have some problems here in the States, though, Eric, because we don't tend to pronounce our R's very well with the Australian accent. So when people have asked us our name and we've said Tarmac Adam, somebody thought it was Atomic Atom, Atomic Adam, and somebody else thought it was Tom McAdam.
Oh, right.
You know, okay. So we're having some humorous interpretations of the name, you know, in certain places.
Matt, you mentioned this first album that came out back around 2003 and then the passing of Paul Hester shortly after that.
Yeah.
Was that the catalyst for taking some time off? I know that there were some family things. You were starting a family, fatherhood, things like
look,
that.
We're sort of at a stage we'd made that record. And it's like, well, what do we do now? What do we do next? And look, everyone has their own different projects they're doing at different times. And I suppose, so what happened? Paul died and there was an incredibly sad time. And there was an enormous outpouring of grief and acknowledgement of Paul Hester and the person he was and the musician he was. And so we're sort of at a time to sort of stop and sort of take stock. And then Nick got back together with Neil, so Crowded House went back out on the road. They made a couple of records. Steve and I moved on to some other great projects. We did a lot of work with the Australian Broadcasting Commission in Australia, lots of musical, you know, compositions for them. And you know, I had a couple of kids, which was an amazing process. But from the age of 0 to 5, they're all time consuming, and you know, you're in that mode. You know,
what caused the restart?
Look, we Steve and I run a small studio in Melbourne, and we'd got to a stage of we'd kept writing and recording songs, not quite getting them to a finished position, and we had a bit of time up our sleeves at the end of 2011. We thought the first half of 2012 there was a chunk of time that we weren't tied up on projects. Nick Seymour became available. He had a break in his schedule. A good friend of ours, Rob Feaster, who's a mix engineer based in Nashville, he said, why don't you come over and mix a record? And so there was all these sort of bits came together. And, you know, I mean, I felt like I had something worthwhile to write about again as well, you know, because I sort of think making music, I don't like wasting the opportunity, you know. If you're going to do it, you do it with some purpose and some meaning, I suppose.
Yeah. When you were working on side projects, was the music similar to the kind of music that you were creating for Tarmac Adam, the band?
Yeah,
a lot of sometimes side projects end up being like film scoring or writing commercials or whatever.
A lot of it was, but yes, you're right. A lot of it was quite different and working to a brief.
Yeah.
So someone comes in. So we did some stuff for film and lots of video and, you know, and I think the Tarmac Adam's got this sound, this thing that people will come to us for that.
Yeah.
And then they'll come with other requirements.
I think that's something that I've noticed in listening to the album from 2003 and now listening to the new one is that despite a decade passing, there are some qualities to the music that are instantly recognizable as Tarmac Adam.
Yeah.
When you guys got back together and started getting a list of songs that you wanted to record, was there a moment for you guys of, wow, things have really changed? The recording process has changed, the technology has changed, the record industry has changed, that took some getting used to?
Yeah. Recording-wise, I mean, we made the first record, we did a lot of that recording ourselves, so we were sort of in that mode. We certainly had more gear, and much better gear. And the real change for us is just, I suppose, putting a record out and really just seeing how the industry's changed in that sense, you know. That first record we put out in 2003, MP3 was really just ramping up, and so it was a really difficult time to put a record out because no one knew where the industry was going to go. And look, it's a little bit clearer now, but there's still that sense of, you know, it's a huge sea of content out there and, you know, everyone's sort of working pretty hard to get noticed and, you know.
Yeah. Tarmac Adam, my guest, live in the studios. I want to hear another tune, but before we do, Steve, you were playing an instrument that looked like it had come out of a time machine. What is that thing sitting down on the floor?
It's a great little instrument. It's called an Omnichord by the Suzuki company in Japan. And I suppose it's a... kind of like a 1980s, early 1980s electronic interpretation of, say, the auto harp. Do you remember those things?
You push the button, you strum it,
yeah,
it makes a chord.
Yeah, folk musicians used to love them. So it's essentially the same thing, except when you press the buttons, it's an electronic chord. And then you've got this little strip that you strum. So if I press it down and then I strum it.
Okay. So it's got a little pad on it, almost the technique of swiping your fingers on an iPhone or something like that nowadays.
And somebody said, someone tells us it's in the shape of a particular American state. Which one is it again?
Someone asked us to describe what it looks like.
Sort of
we
like,
kind of struggled for a while, and then someone said,
like Illinois.
Oh, like Idaho.
Like Illinois, I guess, sort of. Yeah.
Or Idaho, yeah.
We'll have a picture of the Omnichord up on our Facebook page after the session today. You must have to take precious care of that thing. I mean, right? The connections get old and they don't work so well?
Well, look, it is a little bit fragile. We did pick this one up over here when we arrived.
Really?
Because we thought it's probably the easiest way.
You can still find them?
Yeah, people have got them in their basements, I suppose, you know.
But we don't like to advertise that, you know, because the price will go up. Everyone will want one, you know.
It's Tarmac Adam live in the JPR studios, the new album called The History Effect. What are you going to play next for us?
We're going to play a song called Leave. It's a sad thing, one day she'll leave, take all the furniture and the case. But you'll wake up sort of relieved, but more likely now incomplete. Something lost, something gained, move too fast to avoid the same. Relief when it comes never feels enough. Ask for too much might avoid the shame. Da 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 da. So you move on, try to forget. Friend too many, less for less. The makeup hides the distress. Chance encounter, distant caress. Something lost, something gained. Move too fast to avoid the same. Relief when it comes never feels enough. Ask for too much might avoid the shame. Something lost, something gained. Move too fast to avoid the same. And relief when it comes never feels enough. Ask for too much might avoid the shame. I'll be romantic, show that I care. Let's be fantastic, let's be our best. We'll do all the listening, show that we can.
take what you give me. Let's give our fair share. Something lost, something gained. Move too fast to avoid the same. Belief when it comes never feels enough.
That is Tarmac Adam live in the JPR studios here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're also streaming www.ijpr.org. The new album is called The History Effect. When you're creating tunes, is there a different target in mind for Australian audiences and listeners and concert goers compared to maybe a more international audience?
No, not really. I mean, we approach this record with a particular philosophy in mind of how we were going to do it. And it was not about the end result. It wasn't about the destination or expectation, because often there's a lot of expectation when we announce we're going to do it. It was really very much about the process. I was trying to make it as enjoyable as possible. You know, Steve and I, we just do this constant toing and froing of ideas to get it to a point before we bring the other guys in. Real focus was just to do stuff that we really liked playing, you know.
Well, that kind of brings up an interesting question then, which is that if you say that the focus is on the journey, not necessarily the destination. I've also heard you talk about how you were mindful when crafting the songs that ended up on the album, mindful of tempo.
Yeah.
So why? If you guys are simply enjoying the process and putting down the songs that you enjoy making and playing together, why be mindful of tempo?
Well, you raise a valid point. As much as I can't be so indulgent to say it's just about the creative process, you know, we have no consideration for end product. I suppose, you know, we also, the idea of making this thing, you go, okay, you do put some framework or some boundaries around it and say, well, what's the purpose of doing it? And once you set those, then you're just in there doing it. You know, I sort of see it as sort of scaffolding. And one, we want to make songs that people will enjoy listening to. We like to make songs that have some shape and form rather than just being indulgent, you know, self-indulgent, you know, musical landscapes that we could go on for hours with or minutes with. So I suppose there is some context, but once we've set that and we're in it, we're just sort of going for it. But Steve might have something more valuable to add, because he's a much better musician than I am, I tell you what.
I suppose too, there's we were actually trying to make this be like a whole album thing. I mean, I know this is a time when basically you listen to one song randomly amongst your MP3 player, and that's great. But we really did want to feel like this was a bit of an album experience if you did take the time to listen to it from beginning to end. And so in doing that, I like the idea of saying, okay, what kind of elements might make up a good album experience? You know, let's have a few slow songs, a few medium tempo songs, a few sing-alongs, maybe something that's, you know, not in four beats to the bar. You know, so sometimes I think those kind of little starting points can help shape an album as well, rather than just a song-by-song thing. So that's kind of where some of that tempo stuff came from as well, us wanting to feel like that the album had peaks and troughs and sort of took you on a bit of a journey, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
I read that this album took about 6 months to record,
yeah.
Recorded in Australia and Ireland. That's convenient.
Yeah, Nick worked on his own in Ireland. We'd send him MP3s of tracks and he'd work up bass parts. And then he came out to Australia and spent a couple of weeks with us putting bass parts down. And then we went to Nashville actually to mix it at Quad Studios over there, which was
great. That's a lot of air miles to get an album made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it
it's an international album, Eric.
Yeah.
It's a worldly album. It's an album that can speak to all people.
Was it just not feasible to have the whole thing created in a more convenient location in Melbourne?
Nick lives in Ireland, so that's why sort of stuff was done there. I mean, yeah. we didn't go to Ireland this time. And look, we wanted an excuse to go to Nashville. You know, like, we wanted to go and hang out and work there So yeah, we could have all done it. We could have done it in Melbourne. And look, and Rob Feaster, who mixed the record, who mixed our first record, he was living in Australia at the time. That's how we met him. We really wanted him to mix it. We think he's a great mix engineer and has got a certain aesthetic. And he really gets into what we're doing. Like, he likes what we're doing beyond it just being a job, which is important, I think, when anyone works on a project. Mm. Yeah.
One of the things I heard you talk about that may have lent itself to the relative slowness of creating that album is the approach you took to recording individual string parts.
Yeah.
Not a guitar part and then overdubbed with another guitar part, but you recorded individual strings?
Yeah, at times. And I would use lots of different methods of sort of building sonic soundscapes, and that's certainly one of them. I didn't do it at every song, as I wouldn't be
here. And
that
seems really tedious.
It's really tedious. But there's something about... I'm very mindful of this. There's a traditional way of sort of putting down, you know, an acoustic guitar, an electric guitar part, particularly as sort of a chordal progression that you start a song with. You know, it might be... So out of that, those four chords, which is the next song we're going to play, I'd really break it down and go... And then I'd build upon that, and it'd be like, you know... And then, so what would have, the reason I'd do it is you'd get a much different sounding set of notes that you'd mix together, and it would become quite a different thing as if you were separate to if you're just playing a chord. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the band members are not looking at you like you're crazy. So there must be some wisdom to doing that.
Right, Matt's got his own way of doing guitar. I mean, you can't see this.
That was diplomatic.
You can't see this, obviously, in radio land, but he's actually only got... 5 strings on this guitar too. So not only does he tune it all kinds of crazy ways, he doesn't bother with every string either.
So yeah, I don't like the top E ringing. It sort of gets in the way for me, so I take it off.
It's Tarmac Adam live in the JPR studios here on Jefferson Public Radio. Their new album is called The History Effect. Do we have time for you to play one more for us?
Sure.
What did you say you were going to play?
A song called 7 Days. Tell you how right was wrong. Tell you I won't be long. Shall we forget the storm? Tell me the black is gone. Say how it's you and me against the rest, against the sea. The tide is now knee deep. My hand is out to keep. We were right, we were wrong. In 7 days, it's all forgotten. Still, we carry on. We live and love and find a passion. We've had to change the time for us to know. Won't stop now, won't let go. We were right, we were wrong. In 7 days, it's all forgotten. Still, we carry. Agree to agree, we're just not perfect. In 7 days, it's all forgotten. We live and love and find a passion. The best day still. Time fair and determined. Let's find between us the one. Agree to agree, we're just not perfect. Da 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 da.
That is Tarmac Adam live in the JPR studios. Music from their new album called The History Effect. Matt O'Donnell, Steve Pay with percussionist Josh Barber. Guys, thanks so much for stopping and visiting with us.
It's been great, Eric.
Very much. Thank you.